Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to WNYC. I'm Cindy Rodriguez, WNYC reporter sitting in for Brian Lehrer. I'm in the studio with WNYC reporter Beth Fertig, and continuing today's spotlight on immigrant families separated at the border are two volunteer organizers, Julie Colazzo and Megan Finn. Julie and Megan are behind a homegrown effort to reunite migrant families that have been split up and displaced at the border. Their crowdfunding and outreach initiative, Immigrant Families Together, has pooled people and resources across the country to unite parents with their children. Julie and Megan, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Julie, when and how did you come together for this initiative? What compelled you to get involved?
Actually, WNYC played the crucial role in this, in the origin of our story. Beth had a segment on Brian Lehrer in the end of June, during which Jose Orochena, an attorney here in New York, was talking about his client, Jenny Gonzalez Garcia, who was in the Eloy detention facility in Arizona. He said in the segment that he knew that her kids were here at Cayuga Centers in New York. She has three children.
Right.
And the subtext of what he was saying was she could come to New York and complete her immigration proceedings here while being with her children. But of course, what was left unsaid was that how is she going to have the money to get here, to establish herself here, to stay here for the long haul?
Right.
And so after that segment, the following week, I reached out to Jose and said, if you knew that you had a group of people who could provide support to your client, and not just to bond her out, but to bring her to New York and to create a community of support around her for the long haul, would you be interested in that? And he basically started laughing and said, of course we would be interested in that. And that's really how this all began.
Wow. And so how much money have you raised? Who are you hitting up? Are you going to your colleagues, your friends, strangers? How are you doing this? Megan, go ahead. Tell us.
Well, we've been putting together for each woman, sponsoring and calling each GoFundMe page a team around a certain mom that we're going to get released on bond from the detention center in Eloy. So it's been an incredibly exciting process. We've raised nearly $200,000 to bond out now. We've raised enough for seven mothers. We've bonded out six mothers, brought them across the country, and are in the process of now bringing three who were released from detention yesterday to be reunited with their kids.
Okay, and when you say you've transported them across the country, how many drivers do you have and how are you recruiting people to drive?
Well, initially, the way I was involved in this whole process was I received a text message from Sarah Farrington, who was one of the mothers standing with Julie while she hatched this plan, and asking, wasn't I from the Midwest? And I not only was from the Midwest, but I had family in Phoenix. I'm from Ann Arbor, and I live here in New York. So I quickly mobilized friends and family and put together the route. And since then, I've also had really amazing help from a woman named Jen Piper in Colorado, who is an organizer there. And with the New Mexico Faith Coalition and a contact I have there, who's the Rapid Response Sanctuary Coordinator, Daniel Vega. And so they have really helped me coordinate the Southwest. And we have these kind of beautiful little communities that have popped up along these routes to help as the next mom comes out. We also understand that a lot of groups have had luck in flying detainees, and obviously we want to get these women to their children as quickly as possible. Mm. So we're working on that with Restoration Project in Phoenix, and really there are a lot of groups who have been plugging away at this kind of thing for many, many years. So we're honored to be able to play a part in particularly raising enough funds to pay these outrageous bonds.
Right. And so the first woman that you mentioned, Jenny, the woman that Beth has followed, I think her bond was around $7,000. Has it gone up since then? What is the current rate at right now?
So yesterday we posted bond for three women here in Manhattan at ICE. The highest among those bonds was $25,000. The other two bonds were $12,000 and $10,000 respectively. So I walked down the street yesterday with a total of $47,000 in my bag in checks. And it is. I mean, and I spoke to other people who are waiting at ICE at the same time, and the fees are really outrageous. I met several other people who had $12,000 bonds to post for family and friends.
And how does this work? Do you get this money back at some point?
Upon successful completion of immigration proceedings, the bond is supposed to be released. So, but I mean, we're also looking at years possibly for many of these cases.
Okay. Do you have any idea what you'll do with that money if you get it back?
It will either go back directly to the moms for whom we fundraised, or it will go to some other civil rights immigrant advocacy organization to continue this work.
So what can you tell us about these moms? How much contact have each of you had with them?
It's like nothing else. It's been a very incredible experience to have the opportunity to help these individual women and to see them from the moment, you know, they come out of Aloy to how they transform when given support and kindness across the country. I've only met the moms that are here now with us in New York. But it's really incredible to hold them at the end and weep with them and know that you and this whole wonderful group of people that we've put together have been instrumental in changing the course of their families' lives.
Sure. I'm sure it's a very emotional experience to be there and to witness this.
It is. I'm with Jenny daily. Either my husband or I accompany her to Cayuga, to and from Cayuga daily, to see her kids. And I think it's amazing too. She's been able to reunite with Juana, one of the other moms who has come to New York. They saw each other when Juana got here on Monday night. And it's been really special for them to see each other outside of detention. They holed up in one of the bedrooms in my home and giggled like girls for about an hour before we finally said, okay, we should probably take you to your husband and child now. So there's a lot of affection among them as well and a tremendous amount of ongoing support.
So you've opened up your home as well.
She's over there visiting. We have other people who are hosting them.
I just have a question because I went to Eloy with the lawyer, Jose Javier Orochena, and he was meeting other moms through Jenny Gonzalez-Garcia. Mm-hmm. In fact, he told ICE that he was representing these other women in order to get to meet them while he was there. And so is that how you learned about all these other cases? Like, it sounds like he's been your connector, which is why you're working with people in Eloy who also know Jenny. Mm-hmm. So
He's done a tremendous amount of work, and he is continuing to do so. And we're staying the course because, as you know, why we're here today speaking about this issue, things are changing on a daily basis. Legally, we have seen not rapid movement in reuniting these young children. Reports where we achieved 34 reunifications out of over 100 that were expected to happen. So we're kind of staying the course, but we expect to be continuing this work thanks to Jose's efforts to find more women. And I think, Julie, you could probably speak to this more, but Jenny has also been a force herself. If you want to speak to that.
Sure. Jenny is really, I think, the hero of this story, as are the other women. But Jenny has really played the central role here. Her brain is a storehouse of information. She really committed to searing the names, the dates of birth, the dates of crossing, the names of partners and children on her brain and on her heart, and committed to the women that she left behind, that she would not forget them, that she would do whatever she could to get them out. And she's been a person who's passed along tremendous amounts of information to us. And then when another woman arrived in New York on Monday night, she also shared additional information, including about a woman that they were with in detention who only speaks the indigenous language, ma'am. And so she actually has not been able to speak to anybody because nobody's been able to speak to her in her language. So I think the role that these women have played, you know, they're enormously traumatized, but while they were in detention, they had nothing to do. They often didn't know whether it was day or night. They weren't allowed to touch each other. They weren't allowed to hold each other. And so I think they spent a lot of time praying and a lot of time talking and just memorized each other's stories.
So listeners, do you have questions for my guests about volunteering or their work or how you might help reunify families? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So ladies, has this become a full-time job for the two of you?
I think it's become the second full-time job I have.
What's your first full-time job?
I am the co-artistic director of The Tank, which is a nonprofit arts presenter and producer in Manhattan.
So, I see. Yeah.
And I'm a full-time writer, editor, and translator. And I would add that really everybody who's directly involved in our core team are also moms. And many of us are freelance and we work from home and our kids are with us all the time. I have three kids. And so I think, you know, in the background, there's always this sense of like the whole family is involved. And so we're trying to take care of our families, trying to keep our day jobs. And also, yes, working on this literally 20 hours a day.
So from your points of view, we've just had two attorneys on here before. Do you have any sense of how this unification process could be improved for these families?
Well, certainly the topic you guys were speaking of before we joined, how we're navigating the foster care system. Jenny has not been fully reunified with her children. And there are rulings, I believe the ACLU won a ruling on Monday regarding fingerprinting. We're hearing updates on a regular basis. We've, you know, I think we're kind of, for lack of a better word, ad hoc group. You know, we came together out of concern over this one woman. We knew we could make a difference. And I just want to speak to the fact that there's an assumption that we're continuing to, you know, to go along that course, but we've had tremendous resources. Our elected officials have been very helpful with keeping us up to speed. We're in constant contact with the mayor's office, Congressman Espaillat's office. We've even had assistance from Cory Booker's office. So we're learning day by day how the laws could affect Jenny's access and the access of the other mothers we're bringing to New York City.
And has Jenny shared with you specifically what her barriers are?
Barriers to reunification?
Yes.
I think there are many. In her particular case, a family member in North Carolina had started the family reunification request process weeks before even Jose, her attorney, came onto the scene, and certainly weeks before we came onto the scene. So that was already in process. And so there was some question once she arrived of whether it made sense for that process to sort of reach its conclusion without sort of starting a secondary process of her making her own application.
Okay. Ladies, are all your volunteers adults or do you have children volunteers as well?
Yeah, we have a lot of children volunteers. My own children and the daughter Maria Smilios, an Astoria mom, had a lemonade and agua fresca stand in Queens and raised money to rent a U-Haul and fill it full of donations that we had received for kids at Cayuga and Dobbs Ferry and other centers around New York. But the GoFundMe donations are really enough to make you cry on a daily basis. Children send their allowances. They have held sales of their favorite books and sent the proceeds to us. And so kids are clearly very touched by this issue and looking for ways to help.
How long do you plan to fundraise and continue doing this work?
I think until we see this done. I've said this previously, but this is an achievable goal. This should be achievable. If we have been actively part of it in such a quick amount of time in our own lives, and we've really, between us and the kind of pod groups that have popped up around the country, around the networks that we've created, have already been hands-on assisting with the reunification of 13 children at this point, the government can achieve this. This is not that many people. So I think we're going to keep doing this until we see this done.
And do you have sort of an infrastructure set now? Do you have
I do want to shout out to our team. We have a really wonderful little core group of organizers. One woman, Stephanie Deal, in Illinois. She's all of our social media. We have Evelyn Belasco is heading up LA and helping with work across the country. We have Kate Lindenberg, who's been amazing at coordinating all the legal communication. Sarah Nolan, who's about to give birth, who's on all the nightly conference calls, and Megan Stotz, who's also been a huge help, and Zoe. Shout out to Zoe.
I have a question, because you know, you're talking about this infrastructure, and it's not just about the bond, is something that Julie had mentioned to me last week. So, you know, just being realistic here, so you've got attorneys, including Jose, who are pretty much donating their time to work with these women in detention. You've got housing, transportation. You know, are you paying all these other costs, or is it just going to the bonds, because there's so much more involved now?
We have donors that have stepped up in all the locales so far where women are going. So to provide free housing, to help get hooked into the social services that are provided already in that area, and really wonderful people from our extended networks. So far, and also setting each woman up. Jose is going to be passing these cases on to other, because there are very many at this point, to legal representation. So we're helping them secure very legal representation, making sure they find their kids, helping them as they go through the process of reuniting with their kids, housing, more money, funds for them. So it's really a grassroots effort around where the woman ends up.
But you say it's grassroots effort, but it's going to have to be sustainable, because these women's court cases could drag on for years in immigration court. And we don't know where they're all going to land. They may have relatives in other states like North Carolina for Jenny Gonzalez Garcia. You know, for all we know, she may go there with her kids. Or maybe some of them are going to need to stay in New York and pursue a court case here. So, and then there's the lawyers, you know, how are you going to fund all of this? How do you make it sustainable? Because it just started with bond.
So for the professional services, to date, everybody has given pro bono services, whether that's legal. We also have a whole network of doctors who specialize in immigrant and refugee care who are offering pro bono services. And I think what's been really beautiful, I think, to all of us is that in the local communities, people have sprung up to, take action, and they understand that this is for the long haul. We said to them from the very beginning, we've received literally thousands and thousands of offers via every mode of communication except passenger pigeon, to let us know, you know, I have an extra room, I have a car, I have, I'm happy to make meals. And I think we've said to many people who've reached out to us, you have to understand this is a long-term commitment. Our goal was never to just bond a woman out, get her to the place where her kids are, and say goodbye and good luck. It was to say, we want to put up an architecture of support around you to see you through to the end of this, whatever that end is and whenever it occurs.
Which would include learning how to take the subway from right. Queens to visit your yep. kids in East Harlem. You know, there's so much involved when
it's
you think
a lot.
About it.
But I think we, communities of Americans who find this, the result of this policy abhorrent, we owe these people this. I believe that. Whether we voted for this or not, we as communities should come together to support these people in this.
And ladies, let's take a call. We have Margaret from Brooklyn on the line. Margaret, are you there?
Hi, thank you. Just incredible coming together of people on this urgent, intense issue, which is a shame on a complete shame on our country. I would just like to know how I can personally help out more. I did reach out to the Cayuga Center some weeks ago. They did call me back to vet me, but unfortunately, I don't speak fluent Spanish, though my teenage daughter, does speak some. You know, I am available to provide housing for one of these women, available to help transport them. I can provide air miles, maybe some flights. So, you know, if you could maybe direct me and other listeners on how we can connect with you if you do need these services still going forward. And I do understand it's for the long haul.
Julie, Megan, do you want to respond to the caller?
Definitely. So thank you, Margaret. You're one of thousands and thousands of people who are showing up. And that's really what these women need, is for people to show up. Last night, around 2 in the morning, I had a Twitter burst of inspiration to respond to the thousands of people we haven't been able to contact yet in response to their offers to help. And what I really want to emphasize is that I think clearly there's an attraction to getting involved with the immediate needs of these women who are arriving. But to really understand that what led to this moment is really related to systemic structural architectures of oppression and a lack of understanding of our own history and of global history. And so I think if you go to our Immigrant Families Together Twitter handle or to my own, which is Collazo Projects, C-O-L-L-A-Z-O Projects, you'll find about 23 suggestions about different ways that you can participate in this. I think some of the longer term work that's really needed here is about looking at our educational systems and also looking at our electoral systems and media literacy. So these are all areas that are really important to be doing continuous work in as well.
You can also visit our website, which is immigrantfamiliestogether.com, and message us. And we're getting a lot of communication, and obviously this is happening very rapidly for all of us, but just bear with us.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, WNYC Urban Policy Reporter, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. I'm in the studio with WNYC reporter Beth Fertig. If you're just joining, I'm sitting with Julie Collazo and Megan Finn, volunteer organizers with Immigrant Families Together. Julie, am I butchering your last name?
No, it's okay. Julie Collazo.
Collazo. Okay, got it. So what's next for you guys? I think you mentioned a couple of women that you just bonded out last night. Is that correct?
The last bond that we paid was $25,000. And we are preparing for that to be, as we move forward, as we're in kind of a holding pattern before we find out what's going to really happen between now and the 26th, we are going to move forward under the assumption that they're going to continue to be that high, because we've seen them. The two other bonds that were paid yesterday were actually bonds that were set to expire on the 23rd. This is also a concern to me because that is in advance of the deadline for the reunification of the older children. So it expires and an automatic deportation is ordered. So if somebody has a bond on the table that expires, it's unclear whether or not if it's not paid by a certain date, that's going to not take effect. So those are two older bonds, the $10,000 and the $12,000 bond. So the 25K one came after two 15K ones that came after Jenny's, which was $7,500. So you see a pattern of increasing bonds that are coming out of there. So we're moving forward under the assumption that the rest of the bonds that we're going to be able to get out of Eloy are going to be in the higher range.
Do you guys have a relationship with Cayuga, for instance?
We do have a relationship with Cayuga through Congressman Espaillat's office. He's been an ardent supporter and advocate, as has his legislative team here and in Washington, and really interfacing with Cayuga staff and ensuring that Jenny in particular gets to see her children on a daily basis, but also the other moms who are headed here to see their children and reunify with them as well.
Have you met Jenny's kids?
I accidentally met them in the elevator at Cayuga the other day. Jenny and I were getting in the elevator to go up to for her to see her kids, and they happened to step into the elevator at the same time.
I see. Okay. And so has that bond been reestablished? Are they able to share some quality time at Cayuga?
She goes to see them every day. My understanding is that they're supervised visits. I think it has actually become harder for her rather than easier, and the same is true for them. They don't understand. They waited for her so long to get here, and what they can't understand now is why she won't take them with her at the end of the day. So her frustration, her sensitivity is really increasing exponentially on a daily basis.
Right. I'm sure that can be very stressful, especially if they don't understand why they can't just
right.
go home.
And they're three. My understanding is they are three children in a home of eight foster children. And it seems to be the case that just sort of anecdotally watching as parents, foster parents come out of Cayuga, you're seeing families who have 5, 6, 7, 8 kids. So I have real concerns about that. And I'm not sure what our group can do to intervene in that situation, if anything, but the density of children in a single home is something that's concerning to me.
Ladies, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Please keep us abreast of what's happening with the families that you're trying to help. Thank you, Julie Goyasso and Megan Finn with Immigrant Families Together and WNYC reporter Beth Fertig. I'm Cindy Rodriguez, filling in for Brian Lehrer.